everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on the UCC strawman argument when we come back. You know, if you earn about $50,000 a year and you pay all of your 14 taxes, you get to keep 40% of what you create and produce. The government gets 60%. That's about $20,000 for you and $30,000 for the government. Now, isn't that just real special? Now, let's suppose that you think that your share isn't enough for you. Well, then why don't you go out and work twice as hard and produce twice as much and make $100,000 next year? Then go ahead and pay your same 14 taxes, just like you did this year. And you're going to net about 25%, and the government will net 75%. Now, that means that for working twice as hard and producing twice as much, you're going to net $4,000 more. That's 8%. That's an 8% net take-home pay, more than you did this year. It's guaranteed, by the way, by Congress and the IRS. Now, you know, there ought to be something more intelligent for you and I to do than to work to put ourselves into the top 5% of income earners and then only net 25% of it. Now, why don't you call today and order my free 4-hour CD package and let me tell you how to deal with that kind of crime. It's 4 hours of entertaining information. It answers many of your legal questions about taxes and why it is that we pay so much and receive so little. And let me teach you how to do just that in my Tax and Status School, which, by the way, is now available on compact disc for adult homeschool. To order your free General Law CD package, just call direct and order it today. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967, or you can go to our webpage, georgegordon.org. Go to the webpage, georgegordon.org. Click on to the email machine and then send an email request for your free General Law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. I get letters quite often that deal with this thing of the UCC and the straw man and usury and interest and credit and debt and one thing and another. So I got a letter from a young fellow. I assume he's young. Has to be younger than I am. You know, you get to be as old as I am, you know, you got to be young when you write a letter. And he said, could you do a story on credit? Credit card collections? And disclosure statements and rules as to third-party debt collection under administrative law and or maritime claims, and talk about the remedies. There's a lot of straw man talk and or debt elimination due to the lack of backing of the U.S. Federal Reserve note. So could you touch on the subject a bit? All right, that was one letter. And then here's a second letter, and that came from a fellow named Stephen, and then a fellow by the name of Stuart up in Canada. He called me on the phone here some time back, and he was talking about this very same subject. He said, I really enjoyed talking to you the other night. Here's my private agreement with Ernie Bobowski, who is acting as a provincial court judge for the de facto Department of Justice. I can't easily send a copy of the invoice unless I scan it and send it under a separate email. I sent similar letters of agreement to a total of 5 judges, 4 provincial court and 1 Queen's Bench court judge, 2 Crown prosecutors, 2 probation officers, and 1 RCMP officer. I guess that means Royal Canadian Mounted Police. They all had 20 days to respond, and then a second and a third chance to respond, or they would be in agreement by their tacit consent with their silence. They then all agreed that I was injured and must be compensated for my injury, hence the invoices totaling $14 million. I assume that's 14 million Canadian dollars. I used a notary public to witness a letters rogatory, R-O-G-A-T-O-R-Y. I don't know what a letter rogatory is. Shows you how dumb I am. And notice of non-response. As a result of all this paperwork, they now are alleging that I alarmed a judge. And he signs it Stewart. He's being prosecuted for alarming a judge. Down here in the States, they call that threatening, which is, of course, against the law and gets you into trouble. Now, this fellow Stewart is also, or has also been prosecuted and convicted. He's into this thing of straw man and UCC and one thing and another. So we'll take a look at Stewart and how did he make out when he actually put this to the test up in Canada. And then we'll take a look at the UCC argument from the perspective of Larry Beecraft, who wrote an article, did a little history, a little research on this thing of the UCC and straw man, which is a very popular legal argument today here in the United States. I don't know about other countries in the world, but here in the United States, it really caught on here about, I guess, 4 or 5 years ago. I happened to be out in Fresno, California, and this lady gave me a great big thick binder. I mean, it must have been a 3-inch binder. Must have had 500,000 pages, maybe, of material on this UCC. And she said, well, read this, and then tell me what you think. Now, here's the problem with that kind of an approach. How much do I get paid for sitting down and reading 500 or 1,000 pages of material? Do you know if you walked into an attorney and put a 3-inch binder in front of him and said, here, read this and tell me what you think? Do you know what that bill would look like? So I think the attorney would say, well, I charge $100 an hour or $200 an hour, and if you want me to read that book, then I'll be happy to do that. But I want you to pay me. Now, people come up to me and hand me these kinds of books and papers and one thing and another. I guess they expect me to read it, and I don't get paid anything. She never offered to pay me. She didn't say, well, then send me a bill. So I said I'd be interested in taking a look at it, and I did. I took a look at it, and I probably read 30 or 40 pages out of selected chapters through the book, and my conclusion, based upon what I read, that it was bullcrap. And I told her so, and she was very disappointed. I think she had in her mind that she was going to reveal something great and wondrous to me that I'd never heard of before. And quite frankly, I'd heard about it, but hadn't looked into it too much. And this is, again, 4 or 5 years ago. And my conclusion was it didn't have any legal merit, that it was a hodgepodge of truth and error, kind of put together. You can just read the law books. So for instance, you could pull out the Uniform Commercial Code and pull out some statutes, and then you could just start writing what you thought those statutes meant. I mean, irrespective of what any courts or any authorities had said about it, I mean, you could just write down your opinions of it. You could put that together, publish that, and sell it for $75 to some guy on the street. He'd probably believe every word of it. Now, the statutes are true, accurate, and correct, but your opinions attached to those statutes have absolutely no meaning whatsoever. None. Now, I can write a brief, and I can submit that to a court, and I can say, well, judge, here's what I think that means, and here's what I think you ought to do in your ruling. And then, of course, the other side, they can do the same thing. The judge will take a look at my brief and take a look at the other guy's brief. And the judge may come up with a totally different conclusion than either lawyer and say, well, you boys missed the mark here. So let me tell you how this is going to come down. And if we don't like one or both of us, if we don't like the decision, we can appeal it. Now, that's the way the real world works. And then there's this ethereal dreamland, and I call it the Patriot Movement, where people, and I assume that these people have good motives and good intentions, like Leroy Schweitzer of the Montana Freeman, and I'm sure that he's a nice guy. Probably has a wife and kids and a lawn to mow and bills to pay, just like all the rest of us, but he got into this UCC thing over here and got put in prison. Now, I look at that, and then I kind of hear and fear, and I say, well, you know, if I do the same thing, I'll probably end up in prison, too. And I teach my students that. I tell them very simply, if you do what the winners do, you'll probably end up like the winners and win your case. And if you do what the losers do, you'll probably end up like the losers and lose your case. You decide whether you want to win or lose. You decide whether you want to follow the winners or the losers. I'm not here to tell you what to do or how to do it. I'm just here to suggest to you that if you want to win, do what the winners do. Leroy Schweitzer and the Montana Freeman are losers. I don't think you want to do that. Now, this fellow Stewart and Stephen write, and they say, well, can you shed some light on this subject? Can you tell us? Can you guide me? And the answer to that is yes. Yes, I can. And I'm going to start with a little short treatise here written by Larry Beecraft. And if you want a copy of this, if you would go to, and I didn't get the email, but it's Flyway or Flyaway something, Larry Beecraft. I think if you looked up the word Beecraft, you can Google Larry Beecraft, you'd get his website. He's down in, I don't know, Decatur, Alabama or someplace like that. He lives in Alabama. And here's what he said here in a 30-page treatise that he wrote some years back. In topic number 9, the UCC argument, Beecraft says, back in the early 90s, a man by the name of Hartford Van Dyke promoted the theory that commercial law was the foundation for all law around the world. Based upon Hartford's contention regarding commercial law, he developed the idea that an affidavit of truth submitted in commerce would create a lien which simply had to be paid. Hartford claimed that his findings were well known everywhere and that this lien process had been used for thousands of years. So I obtained his memo regarding this argument and I went to the law library. His contention that this principle manifested itself in the law was wrong. I could find nothing which supported this argument. This theory was a complete fabrication. All right, let's pause here for a moment and let's analyze this. When Larry Beecraft says, I went to the law library and I couldn't find anything that supported this argument, it could be that Larry Beecraft is stupid, doesn't know how to do research, looked and looked and looked until his heart was content that he couldn't find anything. It's really there, but he couldn't find it. I know Beecraft personally, and Larry Beecraft's a pretty skilled lawyer. So when he says that he went to the law library and he researched out this subject matter, I find it hard to believe that he couldn't find anything on the subject, if in fact it was there. So we did a little independent research here, and I told you that I did a little bit of research into the book itself, which I think, I'm not positive about this, but I believe this lady's book was put out by Rick Schramm and Jack Smith of Right Way Law. It just seems to me that that's where she got that. But if it wasn't, then there's a lot of other groups and organizations that are putting out this book or books and advertising them on GCN and all over, talking about this thing of straw man, and they've all got a different wrinkle on this. I've read several treatises, you know, over the years now, pieces of paper and bits of information. You know, I'm not an authority. I'm not an authority. I'm never going to become an authority. I'm not going to waste my time reading this kind of fiction. It's like reading Harlequin, you know. And I'm sure that Harlequin are good books, and I'm sure that people that are interested in Harlequin books get a lot of satisfaction and a lot of reading time in reading Harlequin magazines or books. And personally, I've looked at a couple, three of them, you know, and I read a few pages. And my conclusion is that it's fiction that doesn't even rise to the level of reality, and I'm just not into that kind of thing. And if you want to read fiction, legal fiction, like reading legal detective stories, you know, or True Detective magazine or something like that, and you want to vicariously live the life of a detective or a criminal, you know, get after it. Don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success. But frankly, I'm more geared to reality. And I like to know, well, what is the law concerning the Uniform Commercial Code? Now, I'm pretty knowledgeable about the UCC. I mean, I'm not an expert at it, but you know, I know a little something about it. I know enough about it to stay out of it. It's kind of like a mortgage. You know, I'm not an expert on mortgages, but I'm smart enough not to sign one. I'm not an expert on banks and banking, but I'm smart enough not to have a bank account. I'm not an expert on credit or credit counseling, but I'm smart enough not to borrow money and not to pay interest. You know, you don't have. I'm not an expert, you know, on jumping out of airplanes or falling with parachutes, but I'm smart enough not to jump off the Empire State Building. You know, just some things in life that you just stay away from. You know a little bit about it, and you're smart enough to say, you know, I think I'll stay away from that. Like divorce, you know. I went through one divorce. I think I'm smart enough now to stay away from the second one. Now, everybody makes a mistake from time to time, you know, and if you made a mistake and you got into this UCC straw man thing, well, it's time to wake up and recognize that, well, it's a mistake, and why don't we go do something different? Why don't we go do something that's more intelligent? All right, now getting back here then, the theory was a complete fabrication. That's my conclusion also, that this UCC straw man thing over here is just nonsense. Beecraft isn't as charitable. He calls it crazy. I wouldn't go so far as to call it crazy. I think that's a little strong. I think it's misdirected. I think that it's false. I think that it's a mistake. I've made some mistakes, and I've swallowed some false theories in my time, and I understand that when you make a mistake and you believe something that, you know, it's like you're born into the Roman Catholic Church, and one day you wake up and read the Bible, and you say, gosh, the Bible says something different than the Catholic Church. So who's right here? Is it the Pope or is it Jesus? You know, it's a choice that you have to make in life. And, you know, most people stick with the church. Obviously, God doesn't know what the hell he's talking about. And the same thing is true here. It's obvious that the courts and the congresses and the legislatures, they don't know what the hell they're talking about. But some guy over here named Rick Schramm, or Jack Smith or somebody, you know, who writes these books and sells them out here in the street, they must really know what's going on in life. But there's an inevitable result. There's a consequence that comes from your actions. So we'll take a look at some consequences. So did others act upon Hartford's ideas anyway? Well, Leroy Schweitzer of the Montana Freeman took Hartford's ideas to heart and claimed that he created liens against public officials. Based upon these liens, Leroy started issuing site drafts drawn upon some post office account and started passing them out to many gullible people who believed that such drafts were required to be paid by the federal government. Not only did Leroy get into trouble, so did many other people who got drafts from him. There have been lots of people who have been prosecuted, convicted, and then jailed for using drafts allegedly justified by this crazy theory. Again, here's this crazy theory. Well, it's a false theory. I've had people come in here and tell me that they've been writing these site drafts and they paid off the mortgage on their house and bought a Ford Explorer. a lady up in North Idaho was spending these site drafts at the local grocery store, and the grocery store was depositing them and getting paid, and everything was going great. Now, just because you write a bad check and somebody accepts your bad check and gives you the groceries doesn't mean that this is some wonderful new program over here that you ought to be out on the street selling. Just because the Ford Motor Company accepts your site draft and sells you a new Ford Explorer doesn't mean that this is something that you ought to be doing. The guy with the Ford Explorer later on got caught up with. The FBI came out and knocked on his door, scared the Pewaden out of him. Another guy had bought $2 million worth of real estate up in Pennsylvania with these site drafts and one thing and another. The FBI came and put him in prison. The experiences that I've had from people who I've had contact with, students who have come through this school, have all reported in the early going spectacular gains, only to be later disappointed with jail time. I'm reporting what I know, and I'm not an expert on straw men, not an expert on the UCC, but I have yet to read, hear, or talk to anybody who has had a long-term positive experience with this concept of UCC and straw men and site drafts, etc. I've yet. And I have people calling me constantly, telling me about the wonders. I mean, marvelous wonders that come from this. And like I said, you know, just because, you can test it yourself, just go write a check and take it in and cash it. It doesn't have to be good. Just write a check and see if at some point in time this thing of writing checks produces spectacular results as you walk out of the grocery store. You got what you wanted. Then write me a letter and say, I wrote this bad check and it had spectacular results. I got what I wanted. Then call me back a year from now and then tell me, well, what was the results 1 year later? What was the results 5 years later after you wrote 50 or 100 of these checks? I mean, if one is good, 10 got to be 10 times as good. Doesn't it? Now, boys and girls, writing bad checks, writing site drafts, writing commercial paper violates the law of God. They're unjust weights and balances. And the only thing that God ever approved was gold and silver coin when it comes to money and or barter. You know, you want to trade a cow for a horse or a horse for a car or something like that. Those are called just weights and balances. That's the only thing God ever approved of. Man came along and came up with some real neat ideas called commercial paper, site drafts, UCC liens, and those things have a place in secular law. But they are regulated and they're controlled. And this thing of writing checks, you know, you go to the bank and you open a checking account and you deposit some money and then you overdraft your account, that's a crime. And when you write bad checks, they can be forged checks, they can be fraudulent checks, they can be checks drawn on somebody else's account, those are crimes. And just because you get away with it for a while doesn't mean that it's legal or lawful. It violates the law of God and the law of man. And this is the case where you're giving both gods the finger at the same time. My common sense says you ought to make peace with one camp or the other. Beecraft goes on. He says, one of the most recent prosecutions of someone for using one of Leroy's drafts is a fellow named Pete Stern. He's a patriot from North Carolina, and several years ago, Pete issued some of these drafts to the IRS. Pete has been one of the most vocal advocates of the UCC argument. We are Brits, nom de jure, and so on. Now, while I like Pete, he's a hell of a nice guy. Still, he has followed some crazy arguments. Pete's federal criminal case is filed in the Western District of North Carolina, and you can visit the clerk's webpage by clicking here. And once you get to this page, look on the left side of the page to the sidebar and click on the case information section called Docket Image. And when that page comes up, insert Pete's case number, and he puts the case number here, and his name, and his file will come up, and you can read all of his pleadings. Now, when you read Pete's pleadings, is he using for his own defense the arguments that he advocates? So, here's a guy, he goes out and he makes this UCC argument. See? And then the FBI comes, knocks on his door one day and says, hey, you, come along with us, we'd like to fingerprint you and take your picture. Then they prosecute him, he goes into court. Does he make the UCC argument? No, he goes out here and he makes some other argument in his defense. Well, if the UCC argument was so good, how come he didn't stick with it? I mean, if it was the law, then don't you think that he ought to walk into court and say, wait a minute, I didn't break any laws. I'm following the law, and here's the law that I'm following. I mean, that's the common sense approach that I would see or understand. As best as I can tell, this popular UCC argument has its origins in Hartford Van Dyke's work and the improvements that were made by Leroy Schweitzer of the Montana Freeman. Now, the UCC argument is one of the most legally baseless ideas that I've ever encountered. And yet, organizations like Right Way Law and people like Rick Schramm and Jack Smith continue to promote it. Now, here are some published cases which have correctly rejected this lunacy. Again, I'm not calling people that subscribe to this or that have been deceived by it lunatics or crazies. But there are eight cases here. Eight cases. Jones versus City of Little Rock, cited at 314 Arkansas 383. In reference to traffic tickets, the court stated the Uniform Commercial Code does not apply to any of these offenses. The second one is United States versus Stockland, cited at 848 Fed Supplement 1521. Number three, Barcroft versus State, cited at 881 Southwest 2nd 838, where the court said, first, the UCC is not applicable to criminal proceedings. It applies to commercial transactions. Okay, now, number four, United States versus Green Street, cited at 912 Federal Supplement 224, also raised flag and common law court issues. Totally inappropriate. Number five, United States versus Andra, 923 Fed Supplement 157, Idaho. The complaint filed by the plaintiff is not a negotiable instrument, and the Uniform Commercial Code is inapplicable. Number six, Watts versus IRS, 925 Fed Supplement 271. The IRS's notice of intent to levy is not a negotiable instrument. Number seven, United States versus Klimak, cited at 952 Fed Supplement 1100. Returning lawsuit complaint marked refusal for cause without dishonor, UCC 3-501, and refusing other court pleadings for fraud based upon UCC argument got nowhere, also raised nom de jure and flag issues. And number eight, City of Kansas City versus Hayward, cited at 954 Southwest 2nd, 399. This UCC argument is nothing but an expansion of Hartford's theory. Since Hartford never cited any law to support his idea, people who believed this nonsense started looking for anything to support the argument. To support his contentions about commercial law, the advocates of this position have relied upon the case of Erie Railroad versus Tompkins, cited at 304 U.S., page 64, decided in 1938. However, I just simply ask you to read this case and determine for yourself whether it supports the proposition of these advocates. My advice is that if you hear anyone making some argument about the UCC, you run away as fast as you can. The argument is crazy. Now, the conclusion that the argument is crazy, I would go along with. But to call people crazy for subscribing to the idea or being deceived by it isn't. Because lay people who don't know. I mean, after all, when your plumber comes and says, okay, here's what we need to do as a lay person, you say, well, okay, I rely upon you, Mr. Plumber, in good faith because I believe that you're an honest man. Now, not all plumbers are honest, and not everyone who runs around selling $75 packets are honest either. So my conclusion, Stephen and Stuart, is that the UCC is nonsense. And I've cited my reasons here, first of all, from Larry Beecraft. That's number one. That's his opinion. I concluded that he was correct. We've done a little research here. And as I said earlier, I'm not an expert. An expert is somebody that spends months and years studying a topic. And he just knows it upside down and inside out and right and left. And I'm going to tell you that I don't know UCC argument, straw man, and all this to that degree, but I've looked at it far enough to decide that it's not for me. I'm not going to get involved in it. And you don't need to send me any letters. You don't need to send me any emails. You don't need to call me on the phone and tell me how wonderful the program is. My conclusion is I don't want to buy it. And I'm not recommending it to anybody. But then I'm not telling people what to do. I don't offer legal advice. This is a law school. This is not an attorney-client relationship in which you call here and say, gee, tell me what I should do because I'm legally incompetent and unable to make this decision. And you have to go hire an attorney to do that. All right. We're at the halfway point here, so let's take a break and let me remind you that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives. It can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. The Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, economics, history, health, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that those authors or publications that we endorse or recommend are going to reciprocate. Most of these authors and publications that we cite on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not necessarily 100% endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call the law school direct at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about the UCC argument along with the straw man. So we began with a little history. This concept of the UCC straw man thing started with a fellow by the name of Hartford Van Dyke back in the early 90s. It's been around for, maybe 10 to 15 years. It has a tremendous following. There are people that call this law school constantly telling me about the wonders of the UCC. It's almost like religion. Patriots pick up on things like this. And I've been in this for 20 years now, or a little over 20 years, and over the years I've seen various silver bullets come along. And these silver bullets play well for a while, and then they disappear as people are arrested and jailed and one thing and another. And the more people that go to jail, then those ideas, they kind of fall by the wayside, and then some new idea takes its place. I've got a wild new concept. Why don't we just follow the law the way it's already established? Let me repeat that. Why don't we just follow the law the way it's already established? For instance, let's take the income tax. The income tax is a bad idea. I think that the income tax was a regressive tax, and that it's a punishment that we're all paying because we won't practice just weights and balances. And I dropped out of it a number of years ago, and I'm glad I did. I got off of commercial paper, and I got onto gold and silver. I started dealing in property in place of profit. I started dealing in increase instead of income. I started following the biblical program that was laid down by Moses out at Mount Sinai, and I find that the income tax is no longer a problem. It just disappeared. And I'm living my life, and I'm as happy as a clam at high tide, and I'm following the laws of the United States and the laws of Missouri and the laws of God, and I do it all at the same time. It works like a shot. And that's why I suggest, why don't we just practice the law that's already established and be done with all of this hocus pocus? But no, people don't want to do that. See, the tax protester comes along. He wants to use bank accounts. He wants his Social Security number. He wants Federal Reserve notes. He wants checks and credit cards. And he wants to do all of this without paying the income tax. He wants to collect Social Security, but he doesn't want to pay the Social Security tax. He wants the benefits that come from the income tax, but he doesn't want to pay the income tax. Boys and girls, I don't know how to do that. I haven't got a clue. And God doesn't think that it can be done and recommends that you avoid that. The state doesn't believe it can be done, and they're putting people in jail as fast as they can. They'd put more in jail, and they'd put them in there faster if they could, but they're working just as fast as their little hearts and their little feet can carry them, and they're just not able to put all of you tax protesters in jail. I don't think tax protest makes any sense. I'm not a tax protester. I've been accused of it for years and years. People accuse me of being a tax protester. I'm not protesting any taxes. Jesus said that if you're going to deal in commercial paper, that you ought to pay the tax. But he recommended against it. In fact, there's some very straightforward statutes that tell you plainly, do not practice commercial paper. Let me give you a couple of those, just in case you think I'm pulling your leg here. In Leviticus 19:35, let's see if I can find that here. I'm getting close. Here's Leviticus. Leviticus 19, verse 35. It says, you shall do no unrighteousness in judgment, in meat yard, in weight or in measure. Just balances, just weights, a just ephah, a just hin shall you have. I'm the Eternal your God, which brought you out of the land of Egypt. And in Deuteronomy 25, let's see if I can find Deuteronomy here, getting closer, Deuteronomy 25 is what we're looking for, about verse 13 or so. He says, then you shall say before the Lord your God, I have brought away the hallowed things out of my house, and I've also given them to the Levite and unto the stranger, to the fatherless and to the widow, according to all your commandments which you have commanded me. And I haven't transgressed your commandments, neither have I forgotten them. And I've not eaten anything in my mourning, neither have I taken away aught thereof for any unclean use, nor given aught thereof for the dead. But I've hearkened unto the voice of the Eternal my God, and I've done according to all that you have commanded me. Now, can you say that you have obeyed God and done all the things that you were commanded? Now, here's Deuteronomy 25, verses 13. That was 26, 13, and 14. Now, let me go to Deuteronomy 25, verse 13. He says, "You shall not have in your bag diverse weights of great and of small. You shall not have in your house diverse measures of great and of small. But you shall have a perfect and a just weight, a perfect and a just measure shall you have, that your days may be lengthened in the land which the Eternal your God has given you." Okay, now there's three scriptures there. Leviticus 19:35 and 36. Deuteronomy 26, verse 13 and 14, and Deuteronomy 25, verses 13, 14, and 15, that tell you not to use unjust weights and balances. And then he goes on to say, now can you honestly say, no, I haven't done these things. I haven't used unjust. I don't use credit cards. I don't use mortgages. I don't pay usury and interest. I've obeyed your laws. See, most people can't make that claim. And then they get off on these tangents. I'm going to call this a tangent. And I'm going to read you a little story here about a guy up in Canada now. So you don't get mad at me, Stuart. I'm not going to use your last name here, but I'm going to read your letter here. I really enjoyed talking to you tonight. You know, here's my private agreement with Ernie Bobowski, or Bobowski, B-O-B-O-W-S-K-I, Bobowski, who is acting as provincial court judge for the de facto Department of Justice. And then he goes on to say here in his letter here, they all had 20 days to respond, and they had a second and a third chance to respond. Now, he's using somebody. I don't know if it's Jack Smith or it's Joe, you know, IP Daily, or, you know, Joe Smedley, or whoever he's using. He's using somebody's material, and he bought into this program, and he believed in it. But he's been convicted for some crimes here. So let me read to you the letter that he wrote to Ernie Bobowski, the private man acting as provincial court judge on behalf of the Queen for the de facto entity Department of Justice of Yorkton, Saskatchewan. No code, non-commercial. Okay, now this is some of the rhetoric that I read in some of the material that I've seen. And these people all go to jail, including Stuart here. It says, "Dear Ernie Bobowski, enclosed, please find an invoice to you, the private man, for the compensation for my injuries that you have, or that have been incurred by you, that you did agree to by your tacit consent to my registered letters sent to you. I understand that you may be bonded to a certain amount, but your bond may fall short of covering the entire amount of the invoice. You are, however, liable and responsible for the full amount of the damages and my injuries listed on the invoice as per our agreement." I underlined tacit consent and as per our agreement. We'll come back to that in a moment. "Further invoices for still further damages are pending. It is agreed that you have," I'm going to underline that, "it is agreed that you have no reason to threaten, intimidate, or cause me harm for our agreement of compensation to be made to me for the full extent of my damages and injuries. Would you not do the same? It is agreed that you have no reason to refute or dispute the full amount of the invoice because it is in concurrence with our agreement." I'm going to underline, "it is agreed and with our agreement." "I believe the invoice is very clear and self-explanatory. All information is taken from court transcripts and from other records to the best of my knowledge. Please give this matter your immediate attention. Your prompt payment will be appreciated, and I wish to thank you in advance and wish to extend an open hand in friendship and forgiveness to you upon settlement of your indebtedness, and will consider your payment in full as your apology of a huge mistake. Christ's bondservant, Stuart." All right, Stuart, now here's what I see. I read your letter, and then I look at the letter, and I underline some key statements. Tacit consent, as per our agreement, it is agreed, and with our agreement. Excuse me, Did you walk up to this fellow, Ernie, sit down with him over coffee at the coffee klatch and say, Ernie, I would like you to agree to pay me $14 million for something that you did to me? And did Ernie then sit down and sign the agreement with you and say, yes, I agree to pay you $14 million? No, no, I don't think that's the way that worked. Now, here's a little side of the story that comes out that people don't talk about. Let's suppose that I sent you a letter, and I say to you, Joe Smedley, you owe me $10,000, and I want you to pay me. And you don't respond to my letter. You don't even answer me. So I write you a second letter, and I say, now listen, I sent you a letter here a couple of weeks ago, and I said you owed me $10,000, and you didn't even respond. Now I'm going to give you 10 days to respond, and if you don't respond in 10 days, then that's prima facie evidence that you owe me the $10,000. So you receive my letter, and you don't respond. I mean, you don't even send me a letter that says kiss off. So I go down to the courthouse and I file a lien against your house for $10,000. In the meantime, you decide you want to sell your house, but you can't sell your house now because you got this lien on it for $10,000. What would you think of that? What would you think of that? Now, let me describe the conventional methodology. Let's suppose that I claim you owe me $10,000. I write you a letter. You don't respond. I write you a second letter, you don't respond. I write a complaint, and I go down to the local courthouse, and I file a complaint. Joe Smedley owes me $10,000, and I want him to pay it. And a deputy sheriff comes out and serves you with a subpoena, serves you with a complaint and a subpoena, and hails you into court. This gives you notice and opportunity to defend. This is the conventional. This is the correct. This is the normal. This is the everyday garden variety methodology used in Anglo-Saxon administration to collect $10,000. Under this UCC strawman provision, or this program, this idea, this concept that Hartford Van Dyke came up with, I write you a letter, and if you don't write me a letter back and deny it, then you admit that you owe it. That's nonsense. That's not true. That's not accurate. That's not correct. That isn't the way the game is played, boys and girls. Now, you may, honest to God, believe that that's the way the game is played, and you may want to play the game that way, but, you know, when you get down to the bottom line, I think you're going to end up sad. Now, let's suppose you sent a letter to some guy, and you said, you owe me $10,000. And the guy writes you a check and sends you $10,000, and you write him a letter back that says, thank you very much. Is that fraud? No, not at all. Just, he agreed with you that he owed you the 10 grand, and he sent it to you. And if his check clears, well, fine. Now, the IRS does that constantly. They send out, I think it's 84 million letters a year here in the United States, the IRS. They send out 84 million letters a year, and they're all for under $100. And they say, and it's a form letter, comes out of the computer. It says, dear customer over here, Joe Smedley, you underpaid your taxes last year by $84.36. Please remit. And surprisingly, about 85% of people, I think it was around 85%, will remit the $85. And it's always an odd amount, $84.37. $66.26, you know, $94.11. Always under $100, and it's always an odd amount, and about 85% of people respond. Well, 15% of them say, I don't owe them a damn dime, and I ain't paying nothing, and they'll take it because it's principal with them, and they just say, we'll take this to the mat. The rest of the people probably stole $500 or $1,000 anyway, and they say, oh, underpaid by $87. Well, I'll just send them the $87. And the IRS generates billions of dollars a year by doing that. Anything illegal about it? No. Is it immoral? Certainly. The IRS knows those people don't owe that money. But hey, listen, if the guy writes a check and sends it in, then he agrees with you that he owes the money. doesn't have anything to do with the Uniform Commercial Code, doesn't have anything to do with the law, it just has to do with an ethical fraud that the IRS does, and that evidently Hartford Van Dyke and some of these other guys have come up with this conclusion, and Stewart here applied it to some government official named Ernie Bobowski. And here's what he says about Ernie. He says, here's another letter, and I made quite a few notes on this one. Let's get started on it anyway. It says, to Ernie Bobowski, the private man acting as the judge on behalf of the Queen at Yorkton, Saskatchewan, no code, non-commercial. Dear Ernie Bobowski, this letter is in reference to our private agreement that we entered into on or about May 25th, 2005, that was sent to you by registered mail. Please find enclosed a copy of the publication of our agreement as it appears in the newspaper. It can also be found at, and he has in here a website. As I explained, it would be. I want to take this opportunity to thank you for your agreement with me and for expunging the criminal record and releasing me. It is agreed that my ability to come to a good faith agreement with you, the private man, is only limited upon that I bring you and your property no harm other than expected biblical compensation. No citations made for expected biblical compensation for agreed upon damages. Did this guy Bobowski sit down at the coffee klatch and agree to these damages and make a confession? A confession of judgment? I mean, that could be. I'm not saying that he did or didn't. I don't know. It doesn't say here in the letter. But, you know, just because you wrote somebody a letter and he didn't respond to you doesn't make an agreement, doesn't make a contract. Here's what a contract is. A contract is an offer. The offer has to be accepted. There has to be a time element and there has to be some compensation. So four elements in a contract. Offer, acceptance, overtime with consideration. And sending somebody a letter that says, if you don't respond to this, then you agree, is nonsense. That's not a contract. It doesn't have an agreement to it. Now, if there's evidence of an agreement, you know, if I ignore you, you send me a letter and I ignore you, and you construe that to be a contract, and then you act as if this is a contract, you know, at some point in time, I may have to go to court. There may have to be some litigation. And this is what Larry Beecraft pointed out, that there's been 8 litigations over this, and all 8 of them have called this nonsense, at least here in the States. I can't speak for Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and Russia, and any place else. I'm just telling you that this doesn't have legal merit. In fact, it isn't even reasonable. And it's certainly not biblical. And if it's biblical, can you show me someplace in the Bible that's going to support this kind of a conclusion? He goes on to say here, it is agreed that my ability to come to a good faith agreement with you, the private man, is only limited upon that I bring you and your property no harm other than expected biblical compensation for agreed upon damages. No citations from the Bible, no agreed upon damages, redress, and as your understanding of your capacity to effect executive clemency for all proceedings and expunge the false record. I think this guy Bobowski is a judge. And he found Stewart guilty of something over here. Stewart came to the conclusion he suffered a damage, and now he's going to use this straw man UCC thing over here and get even with the judge. That's what it appears like. It is agreed that if it aids your own process in gaining agreements with others, I will gladly take the names of those who you feel may need agreements of their own to protect themselves if you will honor me with those names and contact information. I don't even know what that statement means. I haven't got a clue. I don't know what it means. I don't know why it's in this letter. I don't know where it goes. I don't know what legal bearing it has on our grievance here. It looks like to me that Stewart is sending a letter to this Judge Bobowski, calling him a private man. If this guy is a judge, if he's some kind of a public official over here, he's not a private man. Or are you saying, well, wait a minute, I'm not suing you in your official capacity as a judge or as a public officer, I'm just suing you as a private man. Okay, that could happen. In other words, you could sue a policeman. Let's suppose that a policeman signed a contract with you to buy a house, and he didn't make the mortgage payments. You would sue him then in his private capacity. You wouldn't allege that this policeman stole $500 from you in his official capacity as a police officer. No, he failed to make his $500 payment on the house, and you're going to foreclose on the house. So if you're complaining about a public official, at least here in the United States, you sue him under the Civil Rights Act, and you say, this policeman, while he was acting in his official capacity as a policeman, beat me up and exceeded his authority and made a false arrest and falsely imprisoned me, and that would be an act against the policeman in his official capacity as a policeman. He did something acting as an official of the state that he shouldn't have done. On the other hand, this policeman could be sitting in a bar, and you could just walk up to him and get in a beef with him, and the two of you could get into a fist fight. You wouldn't allege then that this policeman was doing something to you because he was a policeman. You would just be alleging that this guy assaulted you at a bar, and you'd prosecute him just like you would any other Joe Sixpack. All right, so tuck that one away in your heart. So this guy Bobowski over here, from what I can determine from your letter, Stuart, appears to me to be some kind of a public official. He's a mounted policeman. He's an administrative law judge. He's a judge, a magistrate, a district court judge, as we call him here in the States. It is agreed that I, acting God's minister, and I guess from this, Stuart sees himself as a minister of God, a Levite. Well, now I'm not sure, sir, that that's relevant nor germane here. Levites under the Old Covenant, you know, they couldn't run around murdering people, now could they? Weren't the Levites under the Old Covenant just as bound by the Ten Commandments as everybody else? I mean, aren't we all bound by the Ten Commandments, and don't we all have a duty to practice the same law? Doesn't the law of God say that there is one law for the stranger and one law for the homeborn, and we all practice the same law? I don't think that ministers or preachers have anything over any other person. I don't think that lawyers, judges, or policemen have any right to speed break the laws any more than any other citizen. I mean, it is true they do that and they get away with it, but they're not supposed to, and they ought not to get away with it. So I'm not sure that being a minister here is true, accurate, and correct either. We'll get into that next time when we come back. Let me put a little mark right here. We'll come back next time talking about this thing of the UCC and the straw man next time on the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Let me remind you that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.